Good morning. It is time to get up with Fight Night in Memphis. It got physical in the wild, wild west. And in the end, the best man won. You need to see it. Meanwhile, it was raining threes in Boston. Who has the edge after a fascinating first two in the Eastern Conference? We've got you covered every which way. And then hold everything. Is another legendary expat about to join the Tampa title party. This could really be something, and we are ready to roll on this Wednesday morning. Get up on ESPN and look at the squad we put together today. We're ready to roll. The coach is back with us. Dan Graziano's here. JJ and Tim Legler. We are spotted up to shoot threes from the corner, and we had unbelievable drama and an incredible finish in the NHL last night. We'll get to it all. Let's start with this. Crazy one between the Warriors and Grizzlies, game two. Pick it up early, Timmy Legs. We're just 3 minutes into the game. Draymond pushing, Gary Payton going up, and Dylan Brooks knocking him down.
Yeah, Golden State not even on the board yet. Dylan Brooks comes from behind, obviously a dangerous play, catches him in the side of the head, and when you hit him with that kind of force, there's no control of your body. Gary Payton tries to catch himself, and obviously, catastrophic result.
He's got a fractured elbow, and Dylan Brooks was ejected. Then we've got Draymond Green underneath. He gets an inadvertent elbow from Xavier Tillman. But look, JJ, he's got plenty to say to the crowd as he is leaving the floor. We'll show you here. Actually, we'll talk about it in a moment because I want you to hear Steve Kerr's take at the end of the first quarter on the physical play.
No, that wasn't physical. That was dirty.
All right, so Steve didn't like what we saw. One man's physical is another man's dirty. Now let's get to an unbelievable fourth quarter Warriors by one. Steph Curry knocking it down.
This is going to be a theme throughout this series. If Memphis wants to win, they've got to communicate on all those pick and rolls, and that's a miscommunication right there leading to an open three.
Here's another theme. Ja Morant is ridiculous. I mean, Timmy Legs, just look at this man working inside now.
And we just witnessed individual greatness last night. That's all that is. That's Ja Morant's athletic ability. And then when he combines the three-point shot like that now, he's basically
Now he's going back and forth with Steph. Steph had 27. That one gave the Warriors a one-point lead. Season on the line, realistically, for Memphis. Look at Ja Morant working and finding the space. The floater, and it's good. He would score 47 points last night, 18 of them in a do-or-die fourth quarter. Look at him here working in the lane, JJ.
He relies on getting to the paint. There's a fearlessness to his game. He's going to get after it and go right at you.
Now, here's the big moment. Warriors under 30 seconds to go. Clay is called for a travel, shuffles his feet. He can't believe it. Ja says, oh, yeah. We're going to have some fun here, fellas. Ja Morant has emerged. If it wasn't already clear before this series began, it is clear now. There is no list of the best players in the NBA that is valid that does not include his name. And oh, by the way, he's 22. Yesterday was his second career 45-point playoff performance. Only two other players, and you see them there. How about that company that he's keeping, LeBron James and Kobe Bryant? Let's talk it. There's obviously so much to get to from this game. We'll get to all the physicality and the controversy. But a moment on Ja. I mean, JB, you're the ultimate lifer in the sport and obviously a coach. How do you put into words what we're seeing in Ja Morant right now?
It's phenomenal. You can't put it into words. You have to sit back, just watch it, and enjoy the show. You're seeing a guy escalate his game from a young player to a superstar player in this league, and he's clutch, and that's what it comes down to. You've got to be able to make plays at the end of the game and in fourth quarters, and you got to make them on your own, and we're seeing he can do that.
How about it? I mean, I was trying to come up with adjectives as I was going through this highlight before we started to describe Ja Morant, and I can't do it, JJ. He's just too good.
Fearless. That's the adjective. Look, he's at the top of the league in points in the paint. He's a 6'1", 170-pound guard. He lines you up. He uses his quickness. That drop dribble spin to the floater that he had in the second-to-last clip. Like, that is elite shot-making, elite creativity.
There's nothing he can't do. He'll do it inside. He'll do it outside. He's got exactly the mentality that you want. He's got sort of an old-school mentality and a new-school game. So, Timmy Legler, before we get into all the controversial piece, let's just assess where we are. You know, we are professional overreactors, right? After game one, well, if Memphis didn't win that game, now they have no chance. Well, all of a sudden, Gary Payton is hurt and seriously, and he's an important piece of that team. And Ja is in control. Where are we in this series, 1-1?
Losing Gary Payton's huge. I mean, he's the guy most equipped to keep him in front and at least make him work a little bit more at the point of attack. So there's no question that's huge. Klay Thompson hasn't really injected himself into this series yet offensively. I think that is coming when they get back home. But I look at it like this. Here's Golden State's biggest issue with Ja Morant. Right now, he is in a place of comfort because they play such small lineups, right? And they flood to the paint. They scrap. Problem is, when he gets to the paint and jump stops and hits that pogo stick, He knows he's going up to his elevator is going to a floor that nobody else on the floor is. So he's in such a place of comfort that there's not some DeAndre Ayton back there. There's not a Giannis back there. There's not a Brook Lopez back there that can go up and really affect him. Because you look at the way he goes to release the ball, how relaxed he is in a crowd of four people, because he knows he's going up so comfortably because of those small lineups on the floor. That's what Steve Kerr is going to have a problem with. Maybe this Gary Payton, if there is any sort of blessing for this, for the Warriors, it's that maybe Kuminga gets some more minutes. You get a little bit more size and athletic ability on your back line on some of those drives.
Now, I like that phrase. His elevator goes to a floor everyone else's doesn't. That's a pretty good descriptor. In the meantime, let's get to the controversial piece of this. We saw Dylan Brooks with what was a really hard and somewhat reckless play. Steve Kerr asked during the game about the physicality. You heard that. Here's how he answered the question.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was dirty. And, you know, playoff basketball is going to – it's supposed to be physical, but there's a code in this league. There's a code that players follow where you never put a guy's – season slash career in jeopardy by taking somebody out in midair and clubbing him across the head and ultimately fracturing Gary's elbow. He broke the code. Dylan Brooks broke the code.
So if anyone would understand the code, it is all three of you guys at this time. I'll ask you, Tim Legler. I mean, a flagrant foul, thrown out of the game. I don't think anyone disputes that. But was that beyond the pale?
I think it was a little bit beyond the pale. I'm not going to overreact too much to it. A guy trying to get there and take a hard foul in a playoff game. Problem is, when you're hit from behind, right, you're blind to the contact. And when you're blind to the contact, now you are really susceptible to something bad happening. And unfortunately for Gary Payton, he tries to brace himself. I learned early on when I was going to get hit and I'm falling to the ground, the one thing I was protecting was the moneymaker right here.
Right,
this bad boy was not going to catch myself.
Right.
I mean, I could jack this up, even land on my teeth if I wanted to. This thing was going to be protected. And Gary Payton, you know, he's trying to catch himself, and that's why he ends up in this situation. I do think it did cross a line because of the force with which he hit him on a blind hit.
What do you think, JJ?
Despite my very limited athleticism, I actually broke my wrist four times, both of them twice, on a similar play. Three times in high school, one time in the NBA. And I understand, you know, once you leave the ground and you've got that forward momentum, you are in a place of vulnerability. And any swipe across the head, across the body, any pull down. We saw it earlier this season with Grayson Allen and Alex Caruso.
Right.
And the issue, though, and you know this, coach, and you know this, Legs, when you get to the playoffs, every team talks about a no layup rule. No layup rule.
Right.
There has to be paint punishment. And this is a step too far in that.
So let me turn to the coach here on that, because when asked on the off day in this series what he expected, Klay Thompson said it's going to get physical. So he obviously foresaw this. Is this left over from what Draymond did in game one, the flagrant that he got, where there's bad blood here? Like, why did they know this was coming and then it happened?
Well, I think it's the playoff series, and it's the second round, and everybody's escalating that physicality because that's what it takes to win in the playoffs. I think what you saw here was the position of where he was hit. Right. Anytime you get hit from behind, that's where it's difficult to catch yourself. I coached Dylan Brooks for a couple years when I was in Memphis. I know Dylan's intent was not to hurt him. He's not that type of player. I think he just got caught in a bad position. And again, the hit from behind and the brace on the fall is what made it so difficult.
I mean, something can be reckless without being intentional. And those are not necessarily the same thing. So we sit here now. I mean, Gary Payton, again, he's not one of the stars, quote unquote, of this team that people generally know. They know the Splash Brothers. They know Draymond. I think we've come to know Jordan Poole, but he's an important piece of this puzzle. And he's got a fractured elbow, so he's not going to be there the rest of the way. So they're sitting 1-1. Fascinating series. Speaking of professional overreaction, I wrote off Boston after game one of this series. Timmy Legler. And then, oh wait, no Marcus Smart last night with a right thigh contusion? Oh, Giannis is going to put this thing away. Right? Wrong. How about the defense, Legs?
Yeah, I mean, they've done such a great job on Giannis. Horford and Williams, both of those guys are doing an amazing job of staying in front, maintaining contact through the finish. But this is the end of the floor where it was a completely different approach for Boston. Not necessarily there. That's just a great one-on-one play. The way they moved it, hopped it around, ball reversals, driving kicks, multiple opportunities on the same possession. Here's a perfect example right there. It ends up with a wide open three.
JJ, how about Jaylen Brown in the first half going for 25?
He came out with an aggressive mindset, set the tone for that entire team. And to Legg's point, they made 38 shots last night, 28 assisted. That ball was hopping side to side.
There's Jason Tatum. He had 29 last night. Milwaukee really never got themselves fully back into this game. Here's Brown again. He finished with 30. Celtics with a statement. They were up 25 at the break. They win at 109-86. And so they have evened up that series. And so we spent a lot of time yesterday, JB, talking about what can Boston do. And you talked about it. Now, I'll give you all the credit in the world. And candidly, I'll give them all the credit in the world. Because we kept saying during the Nets-Celtics series, well, they need to move the ball. They need to, and they just couldn't do it. Last night, it certainly looked like the Celtics did it.
Yeah, I think the threes that were created, they weren't threes that they just settled for. They went out and actively created those threes. Jaylen Brown was aggressive from the beginning of the game. You saw him with an attack mindset getting to the basket. Jason Tatum the same. And I want to give Grant Williams a big plug. What he's doing on both sides of the floor, making six threes and then guarding defensively like he did, he's a standout for me.
Well, that's obviously the strategy. I mean, JJ, I'm looking at the number. If I have this right, they've attempted 93 threes yes. in the two games of this series. So clearly, they came in thinking Bucks are going to play big, they're going to pack that paint, we're going to knock down threes, make or miss league. The shots went in last night.
A lot of this is, we talked about this yesterday, a lot of this is the Bucks' defensive strategy. They're going to pack the paint. They give up more threes than anyone in the league. The threes are going to be there. It's those threes. It's the type of threes. It's the swings. It's the hit the paint, get it out to the three-point line. And to your point about Grant Williams, what a luxury to have if you're the Boston Celtics, where you can not have the defensive player of the year in the lineup and still have multiple great individual defenders on the floor.
So true. You know, some guys, sometimes you watch guys all year and you have a pretty good feel for them. And I was a role player in the league. You know you have value to what they do. And I felt that way about Grant Williams. And then you see him in a certain context all of a sudden. You go, my goodness, this guy is really a good player and so critical to what they do. There, last night, I'm making notes. I had five possessions written down in the first half that looked like it was Sweet Georgia Brown. Like I was waiting for a bucket of confetti in somebody's face. That because Milwaukee was actually playing pretty good defense. But Boston was passing up a half-decent shot to get a better one, and then a better one, and then a better one. And the game was basically over at halftime. But their ball movement last night was exceptional. They were laser-focused on how they wanted to attack them, and they made the adjustment. Give them credit. So they're back in the series, 1-0. They're back in it now?
Well, let me get to that. And I'm
okay,
work
all right,
my
okay.
way there.
All right.
Because we have to get to Giannis. So I was watching the guys on TNT last night. They were talking about the Celtics defense building a wall. So explain what that is for the audience that's watching this. You hold Giannis to 5 points in the first half when we're sitting here talking about him now emerging as the best player in the world. How did they do with defense?
Biggest thing with Giannis Antetokounmpo is you cannot give him any sort of an angle with your body where he can step through a gap. Because the stride, literally from the foul line, is one stride, and now he's at the rim. So the fact that whether it was Horford or whether it was Williams, there was times Jaylen Brown switched on to him. They kept him square. So he was hitting them in the chest until the absolute last minute where he's releasing the basketball. Look at how many shots he takes where he just doesn't look on balance. Now, I said after game one, Milwaukee won the game, and that's going to be Giannis' worst offensive game in the series. Now, right. He played great in the second half last night, but I actually think he might have been a little bit worse last night offensively. So give Boston credit. That's two games in a row he has not gotten going.
So the Celtics, they give up 86 points last night. And so we can talk all we want about the offense, but at the end of the day, that's a team that hangs its hat on defense. And last night, that's the end of the floor, I thought, where they really won the game.
Look, we saw this a ton in the Brooklyn series. And this is most teams have one or two great individual defenders. And most teams will game plan for a guy like Giannis or game plan for a guy like Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
What makes the Boston Celtics unique is you're game planning, you're showing a crowd, but you've got four or five great individual defenders on the floor at all times.
Quickly, who has the edge now? I mean, as we sit back and assess, we'll have more time to talk about it as the hour goes on. I got to get to an unbelievable finish in the NHL, and I got some football too. But who has the edge? A 1-1, very different games. How do you see the series as we sit right this minute?
Well, I think it goes with the victor because now the Bucks have to make a decision. They're the team that has to make the adjustment. So right now, I got to say you got to roll with Boston.
Okay, yeah. Again, I'm a professional overreactor. It was over after game one. Now, I really don't know. Okay, we had an unbelievable Super Bowl night last night at the Garden here, right uptown from where we are sitting. Thriller of the night, Sidney Crosby and the Penguins here to take on the Rangers. We're going to go all the way to the third. We're tied up at three. This is Kaapo Kakko. His shot is going to be denied by Casey DeSmith, but Smith is going to get shoved out of the net, and the goal is going to go in. Now, hold everything. The Rangers are celebrating. Their fans are celebrating, but DeSmith clearly was cleared out. They rule it goalie interference. No goal. Rangers can't believe it. Fans can't believe it. But we're going to overtime. In fact, we would go to a second overtime. And the Penguins goalie, the aforementioned DeSmith, lower body injury. Out he goes. In comes Louis Domingue in relief. And what a night he had. You're going to hear in a minute that he wasn't expecting to play. Well, not only did he play, he had 14 saves in the second overtime to keep his team in it. We go to the third overtime. 6 minutes in, and here's how it ends. John Marino, blue line, firing. Evgeny Malkin, yes, on the deflection, and that's where it goes. Marino, the deflection from Malkin, and the Penguins win a thriller. Triple overtime. 4-3 at the Garden. They take game one. And no one was more surprised than the game's surprise star.
I think we believe. I actually had quite the meal in between the first and the second overtime. I didn't expect going in, but maybe it sustained my energy. So it was cool, though. It was cool to be part of that.
You say quite the meal. What was it?
Some spicy pork and broccoli. Not the best.
He had some spicy pork and then went out and made 14 saves in the second period. That is an outstanding job, by the way. Whoever was doing that interview, and I apologize, I don't know who it was. That's a great follow-up question. Ask what the meal was. So Domingue, on the spicy pork and broccoli, became the first goalie ever to enter in relief in the second OT or later and did his part, saving all 17 shots he faced. And Pittsburgh steals home ice advantage. All right, to the NFL we go. Just moments ago, the announcement was made the Buccaneers will play the Seahawks in Germany on November 13th, as the league is revealing its international games this morning. And the question is, will Tom Brady be there? Yes. Will his all-time favorite target, Rob Gronkowski, be there with him? Well, let's find out. Gronk told Sports Illustrated, quote, "Oh, yeah. If Julian signs with the Bucs right now, I'm coming back for a whole nother year. He needs to sign with the Bucs." Hold everything. This was not something we were expecting. There's a man who likes some spicy pork and broccoli, by the way. There's Booger McFarland. But Dan Graziano, let me start with you. If Julian signs, is that on the table? Did I miss a meeting?
I don't think it's on the table. Look, this quote was at Gronk's beach party, okay, right on draft weekend. So I would take it not with a grain of salt, but with like a whole rim full of salt, or like around the glass. Because, you know, I think that might be an inside joke these guys have about Julian Edelman coming back, because he's made no noise about it whatsoever. Could it happen? Sure. Anything can happen. We've learned that with Brady over the past couple of years. I think the story is Gronk, right? And is he coming back to play? And Tampa Bay and Tom Brady are still waiting to find that out. They're giving him time and space to figure it out. He's not sure yet if he wants to play, but they'll have him back if he does.
Well, look, there was a moment in time when we thought Gronk was definitely done. His body was beat to shreds. He was psychologically finished, emotional in his press conference when he announced his retirement from New England. And a year later, he was back and healthy and happy and caught two touchdowns in a Super Bowl. So stranger things have happened than maybe seeing Edelman again. Boog, good morning, and let me get your take on how critical a piece to the puzzle. You make your home there in Tampa. How critical a piece to the puzzle would you say Gronk is to Brady's chances of winning another ring?
Well, Green, I think it's very critical. I think we all know the relationship they have, the chemistry that they possess. And I think that Tom Brady just feels comfortable knowing that Rob Gronkowski is out there some way, very similar to Joe Burrow. He always says, you know, I know Jamar is down there somewhere. I can just throw it up. I think Tom Brady feels the same way about Rob Gronkowski. He's still a very good blocker. He still can get open in the passing game. And on top of that, they drafted a young tight end out of Washington, Cade Otton. And so if Gronk does come back, he doesn't have to carry the entire load. He's got some young guys. They need him for the postseason. I don't think it's if he's coming back, Greeny. I think it's when. Expect Gronk to make an announcement probably somewhere in the summertime. He'll be back, because as long as Tommy's in Tampa, it's sunshine and no state taxes, baby. I expect him to be here also.
Is that the expectation? I mean, Dan, the people you talk to, do they expect that Gronk will come back for another run?
Yeah, it's not 100% because his body is beat up and he may decide not to. But yes, I think most people expect that that's what will happen and that he's just not a guy at this stage of his career who's too eager to go to minicamp.
And very quickly, by the way, Booger, I want you to see this. Tom Brady, 44 years old, posted a picture on Instagram yesterday. Take a look. The man is shredded up. And this is a guy everyone makes fun of. But look at the shape that, what do you think of that? Booger, how about Brady right now in the shape that we're seeing him in there?
You know, Greeny, after being with you in Las Vegas for the draft, I think you look very similar, buddy, to be honest with you.
There you go.
No, it's not me. It's Graziano. Do we have that? Graziano's been.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
You know, Brady is the only NFL player, or the closest NFL player to my age. So this makes total sense.
That's probably right. All right. Yeah. What a wild morning we have working. Everyone stay where you are. We're just getting started. Coming up, so much more on a jaw-dropping performance from Morant last night. He has taken over the series. Is he going to knock the Warriors out? We'll talk about it. Plus, we've got drama in the desert. Why one member of our crew says Kyler Murray could be asking out of Arizona? Holy smoke. We'll get to it. Let's get up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Marvel Studios' Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, only in theaters on Friday. All right, best moment of the day in sports by far. All right, Yankees, Blue Jays. Graziano, I want you to see this. All right, so you got a fan in Toronto who's going to catch an Aaron Judge home run ball, and there's a kid in an Aaron Judge t-shirt sitting there. He's going to give him the ball and look at the kid's reaction. Just watch.
Oh, man. Oh, beautiful. Man, I'm glad this was in Canada. They're nice in Canada. If this had happened in Boston, I don't think this happens at Fenway Park. I'm just saying. I've covered a lot of games both those places. I don't see it happening at Fenway.
That's a point well made, but that is a great moment there. All right, the intensity's been turned up a notch. Warriors, Grizzlies, who has the edge? We're talking about it. Plus drama in the desert. Does Kyler want out of Phoenix? We're talking about it. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back on Get Up. If you're just joining us, the game of the night, Warriors and Grizzlies. All the physicality in the first half, then the fourth quarter, an absolute thriller. Just under 4.5 to play. Grizzlies season on the line, down 4. Ja Morant, JJ.
Attack mode all night. There's nothing you can do if you're the Warriors once he gets to the paint.
And he just kept doing it. 47 points and fearless in that fourth.
Step back three here. If Ja Morant's making step back threes, he's unguardable.
Yeah, and that's right. And he was, of course, playing against the master of the step back three, and that's Steph Curry. But this time he's floating in the lane.
They had a lot of miscommunication down the stretch on these pick and rolls up top. Steph Curry able to turn the corner there. This was the move, though.
Yeah.
This drop, dribble, spin to the floater. That's elite creativity right there.
That one giving Memphis a one-point lead later. Now here's Morant again. Like a season on the line, JJ.
Again, he's just going to line you up, get into the paint, elevate, and score.
Here's the big moment now for Golden State. They're down by 3 in the final 20 seconds, and Klay Thompson has called for a travel, and that is all she wrote. Grizzlies take it 106-101. They even the series at one game apiece. Ja Morant is clearly the story here, as he has been just sensational. I don't need to say, Tim Legler, that he's emerged as a star, because he was already a star before this postseason began, but he's clearly taking it up a notch. What are we seeing here?
Well, first of all, the podium is appropriate. I feel like I'm in court with the law firm of Reddick, Legler, and Greenberg, ready to make their case.
Okay.
All right, so this is what I'm talking about earlier with Ja Morant and what he's looking at the end of these drives. There's just not enough size on the court. But here's one thing that cannot happen. All right, and this is about as much length as you could put on him. It's Wiggins. The problem is you cannot miscommunicate these screens. So as this screener comes up, he's got two options. He's either going to come up on this side or he's going to come up here, and then the critical defender is here. You're Jordan Poole. You're coming out. You've got to be on the appropriate side depending on where the screen gets set. And you can see he ends up on the wrong side, and that takes Wiggins basically out of the play. So now you're going to have two defenders basically left in the dust. And here's the last part. Watch when Ja Morant, I'm going to show this one more time. Watch when Ja Morant goes up and where he leaves the ground. So he takes off there. Klay Thompson comes down. Ja Morant stays in the air for 2 more seconds. All right. Now, here, you get another switch, and this is Jordan Poole. This is the one we just showed a second ago. Look at how elite this is. Now, first of all, Jordan Poole is going to turn around in this direction, and you're going to see he ends up basically looking over in this direction in the corner for Ja Morant. He's looking over there. The problem is Ja Morant is right here, and when he spins out of this at the end, again, he elevates. Look where all the defenders are for the Golden State Warriors. Right? So you pack the paint. You do what you're supposed to. The problem is there's nobody in Ja Morant's airspace, and he knows it. At the end of these drives, when he comes down here and gets that last bounce, he's going up, and there is nobody above 6'7", 6'8", on the floor. He is in such a place of comfort that when he releases it, it's not what I call an honest contest. And that's why he's finishing everything in the lane.
I'm just going to say it, all right? I love him. And if you don't love Ja Morant, then I don't know what you're watching. So I even hate to ask this question. But in a physical series where Ja Morant at 6'1", 170 is off his feet in the lane as often as he is someone going to send a message somewhere along the line defensively, put him on his butt and say, let's see if you have the guts to keep coming in here?
I don't know if you take that approach with him. I don't think Golden State's got the personnel to do that. And Draymond Green would be the one guy. He certainly can't get involved in something like that now. He's already got a flagrant too. The other thing is they're on the ground with their last line of defense.
Right.
So, you know, to hit somebody, you got to get up in the air too and go chest to chest. Look, it's a problem with Ja Morant. He's taken some horrific falls in his career to this point. It's really a miracle he hasn't been hurt more seriously because of the way he flies through the air. But right now, something has to change to affect what he's seeing at the end of these drives.
He is the best show in the sport. Let's get to another series here. We got the Sixers down 1-0 in Miami. And just 2 seasons ago, James Harden led the league in scoring, 34 points per game. This year, the average down to 22, his lowest in a decade. His shooting percentage, 41, his lowest since he was a rookie. The playoffs recently have been a major head-scratcher for Harden. He's recorded 11 consecutive games under 25 points. That's the second longest streak of his postseason career. Remember, he began his postseason career coming off the bench. And in these playoffs, his shooting percentage, 31% when heavily contested. That's the third worst out of 36 qualified players. For reference, that same shooting percentage last year was 40%. That can be the difference between a team moving on and getting knocked out. JJ, I didn't have you here yesterday. A lot of the conversation with Embiid not playing in games 1 and 2 is, well, here's Harden's chance to step up and finally carry this team and all of that. What did you see in game 1 and what did it mean?
I saw the James Harden that we've seen for the last 2 months in Philly and really all season. And we need to stop viewing James Harden through the lens of who he was and view him now through the lens of who he is, and that's as a playmaker and a facilitator and not as an efficient scorer. So the idea that he should all of a sudden take 25 or 30 shots, he's an inefficient scorer right now, Legs. That's not good offense. And we can watch the game and say, James Harden's having a hard time getting by people. Mm-hmm. The advanced tracking data that they have set up in all the arenas, that backs it up. You know, his top speed is significantly lower over the last season and a half than it was when he was in Houston. His blow-by percentage rate, significantly lower this season than he was in Houston.
So coach him up, JB. What do we do about this? If Harden, he's obviously still an incredibly important piece of what you're trying to do. How does Doc figure out a way in this game, too, to put him in a place where he can be a more important piece of that offense?
Well, first, I'm glad I'm here with you two guys because I know you can relate to this. When you do get older and you do lose a step with that athleticism and burst that you guys both had, right, you have to start to use your brain. And James is an extremely intelligent basketball player. So if he does not have the same burst because of the hamstrings or whatever it may be, now you have to outthink your opponent, right? He has the ball handling skills. He has the physical frame where he can use his brain to help himself beat his man, set his man up, and get to the basket and still do what he needs to do.
I will remind everyone that JB coached, was on the staff in Houston, and so have coached James Harden in your life, so you know his game intimately. Legs, how about it? Game two, I don't want to say season's on the line. You lose the first two on the road, and you're coming home. Maybe you get Embiid. So let's not overstate the significance of it. But it feels like we need to see them put up more of a fight.
We do, and I think I feel – in a way, I feel bad for James Harden because, I mean, can you think of a player in recent memory excuse me, that's had more laid in his lap? Hey, James, please figure this out while we're waiting on Embiid. Go be James Harden from 4 years ago. And he knows physically right now, I don't think he's capable of doing it, so I'm going to look in a different direction. Look, if you're George Niang, if you're Danny Green, if you're Korkmaz and you get minutes tonight, you know, if you're Maxey, you got to be better. Those guys have to make open threes, period. And they missed probably 8 to 10, what I would consider naked threes by NBA standards. You've got to do something to help James Harden get some more space so guys aren't sitting in his lap. He didn't get a lot of help in the first game either, but I completely agree with JJ in that, you know, 5 for 13, if he shoots more, turns into 9 for 25 real quick. And that's not helping you win either. He's got to be more selective.
But can they get him better shots is the question, because the points have to come from somewhere. So I get it. If you get him shots, he will make them. The problem is he's taking all these shots. He's not beating anybody, so he's taking all these contested shots. Can you get him better shots?
So one of the things that we talked about yesterday is just the idea of getting him off the ball initially.
Right.
And putting him in places where he can start with movement to get downhill. You guys used to run this set in Houston for him where he would start in the right corner. Ball would end up at the high key. It's delay action, basically. And he gets a pin down from the other guard and comes off to his left hand with the head of steam and is able to make plays and hopefully finish. But what we're witnessing now in this ISO, slow, methodical James Harden play, it's not able to break down a defense. And so getting him in movement, I think, is the key.
All right, we'll see what they can do. That was a game at halftime. They had a one-point lead at halftime, actually, in game one. We'll see what they can do tonight. And then we get the games back this weekend. We'll be here Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, a great doubleheader. We'll have game three of that series in Philadelphia. Then we'll have game three of the series between the Suns and the Mavericks. All the action can also be seen on the ESPN app. We'll start it with NBA Countdown, 6:30 Eastern. Again, we've got the games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Meanwhile, huge news out of the NFL early this week. Cardinals wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins suspended 6 games for violating the NFL's PED policy. And as it relates to his quarterback, Kyler Murray, listen again to what Diana had to say yesterday here on Get Up.
From what I can gather, having a few conversations over the last few weeks, Kyler Murray isn't going to play until a contract is done. So what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to hold out? Does that mean they're going to request a trade? These are things that all could happen between now and training camp.
Wow. So, Dan, help me with this here. It felt like we sort of forgot about that story, right? Kyler, he scrubbed them from the social media, and then the agent put out like an unprecedented statement, and then we moved on to other things, but apparently he has not. What's going on in the desert?
They haven't done the contract yet, and that's he's waiting. He's not been at the voluntary offseason workouts, which is not unique to him in Arizona or league-wide.
But June 14th is the first day of the Arizona Cardinals' mandatory minicamp, right? So if he doesn't show up for that three-day minicamp, he can get fined, and they would fine him for doing that. So that's really the next sort of pressure point here, right? Like, if he still doesn't have a deal done by June 14th and he doesn't show up for mandatory minicamp, that's a signal to the team that, hey, I'm serious about not playing without a new deal. So, and then at that point after that, it's training camp in late July. So there is time for them to do this deal, and both sides are interested in doing it, from what I understand. But as of now, I don't think they will see Kyler Murray until that deal is done.
So, Booger, what do you think? I've had former players say a variety of different things about what he should and shouldn't do on this show. How do you see this thing in the desert right now?
Well, I think first and foremost, from the player's point of view, I can understand why Kyler Murray wants to get paid. He's seen all the other elite quarterbacks get paid after their third season. He's saying, hey, why not me? Here's the problem. His attitude doesn't reflect that of what I would call a franchise quarterback who's the leader, first in, first out. He's kind of a whiner, man. Like, if you go back and you look at Kyler Murray on the sideline when things aren't going well, he's pouting. He doesn't exude what you want your franchise quarterback to see. So he's got to work on that. Now, if you're the organization, here's what you have to ask yourself. We've taken the head coach, we've drafted the quarterback, and we've built this entire organization around this system. Are we willing to invest $200 million in a 5'9 quarterback in this air raid system? To me, that's the key. Right now, Arizona says yes, but actions speak a lot louder than words, Greeny.
Well, I think that's reasonable. And I think, look, those are the questions they have to ask. And to Booger's point about leadership, I mean, what we're seeing here, this public playing out of his contract demands, that's generally not the way quarterbacks do this either. Put a pin in that. I want to come back to it as we continue. But meanwhile, let me continue on the road to the Stanley Cup. The chase for the Cup continued last night with the Panthers hosting the Capitals. Game one in the East, third period. Panthers leading 2-1. They got the puck, and they're looking to make something happen. It's Alex Ovechkin, however, turning defense into offense. He's got the steal. Evgeny Kuznetsov has got it on a one-on-one. And look at the look as he scores upstairs. Take another look at the great defense from Ovi. Then you've got Kuznetsov. And then you've got the Capitals tying the game at 2. Just over 2 minutes later, Panthers have the puck again. This is going to be Nicholas Backstrom making a nice pass for TJ Oshie. And TJ Oshie is going to do the rest. Oshie pokes it home. Take another look. Capitals would tack on an empty net or a little later. They'd win it 4-2. So they take game one of that best of seven series. Coming up, was all the drama over Debo much ado about nothing? Our insider will give you the latest on where things stand in San Francisco. Next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back on your home for the chase for the Cup, and let's crash the net. Beginning in last night's action with a scoring spree in Colorado, the Avalanche got 5 first period goals and beat the Predators by a final of 7-2. Nathan MacKinnon had 2 goals on the night. Meanwhile, there's a lot of drama in other buildings in Florida. After trailing 2-1 going to the third, the Capitals got 3 goals in the final period, including the game winner from TJ Oshie and then an empty netter late to beat the Panthers by a final of 4-2. In Calgary, the Flames got an early power play goal from Elias Lindholm, and then goalie Jacob Markstrom did the rest, stopping 16 Dallas shots as the Flames shut out the Stars by a 1-0 final. And the big controversy was here in New York, Rangers with a late third period goal that should have or could have given them a win over the Penguins. The Penguins asked for a review, and it was determined that Kaapo Kakko interfered with goalie Casey DeSmith. Score remained tied at 3. Ultimately, in triple overtime, Evgeny Malkin would tip in a game winner, and the Penguins would wind up taking game one. I have so much work in here. And look at AJ Molesko, good enough to get up with us early today from Toronto. Thank you so much for doing that. And that's obviously the big controversy coming out of last night. Did the officials ultimately get the right call made?
You know, you got to look at it's such a tough job what these officials have. I will very rarely say that they've got it unequivocally wrong. It was a 50-50 call. Even Gerard Gallant, the head coach of the Rangers, said he had a feeling it was going to go against him. So he wasn't, I'm sure he was upset about it, but he wasn't upset with the officials. The way I looked at that is when you've got a player that's going into the goalie and taking the goalie out of position and unable to make a save or play his position, that's the right call. And so I do think that they got it right. I'm not sure that Kako, it wasn't within his necessarily all of his control because he had Dumoulin on him. It's a hockey play. He's crashing the net. But at the end of the day, it's a 50-50 call, went against the Rangers, and now they've got a giant battle ahead of them.
Absolutely. And it's a heartbreaking loss and all the way to triple overtime. How do they bounce back after such a difficult night?
You know, in the playoffs, almost every coach I've talked to will always say there's no momentum from game to game. So they've got to start fresh. They got to start over. And they can. They have the horses. They've certainly got the goalie, 79 saves from Shesterkin. So he gets a day to recover and get back at it. So, I think that they have what they need. They have the recipe. They've got the leadership in Zibanejad. Gallant's pushed all the right buttons for them. So this next game is going to be huge for them. Game two is always big, but when you're coming off a triple overtime loss, they got to get right the ship.
You are in Toronto for the call of Lightning and Maple Leafs. Do you expect the two-time defending champs to bounce back after being shut out in game one? And if so, how do they do it?
I do expect them to bounce back. I expect that they were a shell of their former selves here in game one. Not to take anything away, Toronto did everything they needed to do. They were pushing. They were, foot on the gas pedal the whole way. But you can't hold Tampa Bay down there. The last two playoff runs, every time they've lost, 15 times, they've come back with a win the next game. So we'll see what they've got tonight.
That said, the odds makers see the Avalanche as a significant title favorite. As we sort of begin this run, who do you see as the favorite to wind up at the top at the very end?
You know, it'd be so much more fun if I had a different answer, but we had to put in our picks before the playoffs started, and I did go with the Avalanche. I think that the last couple of years, they've been favorites, and they've stumbled, and they've, had they've taken their licks, they've faced that adversity, and they really have incredible talent. They got Landeskog back, they've got Rantanen back in the lineup from injury, Makar, one of the best defensemen in the business, and unheralded, but Devon Taves, his partner, is phenomenal as well, and then Darcy Kemper is such a good goaltender, a good pickup by them this season. So they have all the pieces. It's the playoffs. Anything can happen, but they looked awfully good in their opener last night.
AJ, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for getting up with us. We'll see you down the road. Thank you.
No problem. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's AJ Molesko. The Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight. Four game twos on our air. Bruins Hurricanes, 7 Eastern on ESPN. Lightning Leafs, 7:30 on ESPN2. Then the Wild and the Blues here on ESPN. And then back to ESPN2 where the Kings lead that series after their game one win. The road to the Cup rolls on here on ESPN. All right, back to the NFL, where Deebo Samuel remains with the 49ers despite his trade request before the draft. Monday, the general manager in San Francisco, John Lynch, addressed that situation as the two sides look to reconcile their differences.
We're trying really hard with Deebo to work through, whatever the issues might be. I don't think they're insurmountable. I think we can find a way to resolution, and we're hopeful for that because, I mean, we know what he's been to this organization.
Again, my insider extraordinaire is Dan Graziano. Dan, this is another one that quiets down because the draft comes and goes and the deal doesn't get made, but that doesn't mean all is well. Where do we stand now?
The 49ers are hoping that it's quieted down, and you hear John Lynch articulating what I've been told about this situation over the past week, which is that the 49ers believe the issues can be resolved and that they can get to a point where they sign Deebo long-term. That's their intention. That's their hope. The question, of course, is whether Deebo wants that. And, of course, all we know from him is he told Jeff Darlington he wants a trade. That was a couple weeks ago now. Haven't heard much from him since. So that's the key thing. John Lynch is optimistic, but he's not certain. If you listen to his comments, he's saying we hope we can work through whatever the issues may be. If not, obviously, then they'll have to move him because he won't want to play for them.
Boog, what is your sense here? Again, the urgency feels like it slides a little because if they're going to trade him, they're going to trade him for next year's picks. So they have time to try and figure it out. But where do you think this thing ultimately goes?
Well, Green, I think there are two things at play here. I think the first is, does Debo want to play on the West Coast? That seems to be the number one issue, not necessarily about the money. As someone who grew up in the South, I can tell you, Greeny, I enjoy going to the West Coast. I love Las Vegas, but I'd much rather live day in and day out somewhere in the South. Then number two, and to me, I think this is a sneaky big issue. Are they wanting to pay Debo Samuel $26, $27, $28 million a year as a top-notch receiver when he's kind of, as they call him, a wide back? He's not necessarily your go-to number one receiver. So I think that's two things that have to be resolved. Both of them are extremely important. I think the latter is one we're not talking about enough, Graz, because everybody seems to be focusing on Debo doesn't want to be in San Francisco. We haven't even gotten to the contract. But once we get to the contract, are they willing to pay him $27 million a year? That's something I would love to know the answer to.
Do you know the answer, Graz?
I think the genesis of this is that the 49ers' initial offer was not one that he considered, acceptable or even respectful. So they have to get to a point where they're a little closer with the actual number. I'm not sure it needs to be $27, $28 million, but it has to be higher than apparently where the 49ers start.
Look, that's sort of where the going rate is now. You got Tyreek Hill, you got Devontae Adams. If he sees himself in that category, we'll see if they're willing to go there. All right, as we continue in a moment, we saw what he said, but what in the world did it mean? One of Lamar's former teammates is here with his take on where all this is down in Baltimore. That's coming up. This is Get Up on ESPN.